Hey everyone, John here. Just a quick word of warning. We will be spoiling this film in its entirety. So if you have not seen this film and you don't want it spoiled for you, just hit pause real quick and go and watch the movie and then come back and enjoy the show.
Do you know me?
No. No.
But I'm the guy that tells you there are guys you can hit and there's guys you can't. Now that's not quite a guy you can't hit. But it's almost a guy you can't hit. So I'm gonna make a fucking ruling on this right now. You don't fucking hit him. You understand?
Welcome to another episode of Surviving Chick Flicks, Manly Movie of the Month edition. I'm John.
I'm Joseph.
And I'm being replaced by a sock puppet. Oh, hi, Sammy. How are you? And this week, I got to pick, and we are talking about the 2006 drama The Departed. Also, apologies in advance to the city of Boston. Because I have a feeling some accents are happening.
They're all mostly going to be John.
Yeah. I don't know. Hold on. Let's see how Sock Puppet Sammy does this. I'm going to park the car and have it yawn. See? She's just as bad. This is what she gets for putting her job first.
You know, I expected better, Sammy.
I know. But then again, she agreed to do a show with me, so I don't know her. Questionable judgment. All right, well, I am sure on this episode we are going to have a lot to talk about, so why don't we play the trailer and then we'll get into it.
When I was your age, they would say we could become cops or criminals. What I'm saying is this. When you're facing a loaded gun, what's the difference?
This is not the regular police! This is the state police!
We are an elite unit.
This is who we're after.
Frank Costello.
You won't be paid as a regular cop, but there's a bonus involved.
So what do I do?
You will not ever know the identity of undercover people.
Do you have anyone in with Costello presently?
Maybe.
Do you know who I am?
Maybe not.
I'm gonna have my associates search you.
That was quick. Think he's dead already?
Get your hands off me!
I think we could work something out.
We are all convinced that Costello has at least one mole inside the Special Investigations Unit.
There are parts of my job I can't talk to you about.
Man, you are trouble.
You don't know the half of it.
You better get organized, quick.
Hey, last time I checked, I tipped you off, and you're not in jail.
Getting the feeling we got a cop in my crew.
Sooner or later, he's gonna find out who I am, and he's gonna kill me.
I can get the rat. You just gotta let me do it my way.
If you don't, it won't be me who pays for it.
There is a leak from the inside. It's real, man. Smoke him out.
You're lying to me.
There are things you don't want to know about.
What are you waiting for, honestly? I mean, do you want him to chop me up and feed me to the poor? Is that what you guys want?
How's your mother?
She's on her way out.
You all are. Act accordingly.
All right. The Departed, starring Jack Nicholson, Leonardo DiCaprio, Matt Damon, Mark Wahlberg, Martin Sheen, Ray Winston, Alec Baldwin, Vera Farmiga, Anthony Anderson, Kevin Corrigan and James Badgedale, and directed by Scorsese. just real quick before we get into the, how we normally do this, did you watch like Animaniacs and Tiny Toons growing up?
Oh, of course.
Do you remember the God Pigeons or Good Pigeons or whatever they were called?
I think they were the Good Pigeons. Yeah. But yeah,
I learned about Scorsese.
I didn't realize that was Scorsese because I was too young to watch those at the time.
Yeah.
And
going by do what?
I said, but now I get it. You know. Yeah. But I don't know what they're referencing. I have no idea what this is about.
Yeah. Yakko, Wacko, and Dot did a Seventh Seal parody.
I remember that, and that was before I even knew what it was.
Yeah.
I was like, this is a little dark.
Well, you gotta remember, that movie was also remade as Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, so...
And I watched that as a kid, and I did not know that either, and I loved that movie.
I still have not seen the third one, but I watched the first two leading up to the third one, assuming I might go to theaters to see it, but this flu was going around and I stayed home.
Yeah,
flu's still going around.
I like the third one quite a bit. It's not as good as the first two, but it's fun.
Yeah, I think it's on Hulu now.
I don't know. I own it, so
I don't. So I have the Superior Collection, which is Wayne's World 1 and 2. So
blah 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 blah. Yeah.
So anyway, but none of this is about Irish gangsters, which, by the way, this was the manly movie of the month for March, even though we're recording in April, because we were going to record right after St. Patrick's Day, and so.
Even if you really liked the movie, there's only so many times you can watch it at a certain point, you know?
Yeah, which, in retrospect, I'm kind of glad and not glad that we didn't do Goodfellas. I don't want to burn myself out on that one. This one can take the hit. but Scorsese, I'm surprised. A year and a half of doing this show, we're just now touching on a Scorsese film. I think I even created the Manly Movie of the Month idea so we could talk about, you know, Scorsese stuff. But I think that was like my low-key way of trying to force Sammy to watch After Hours. No, but I am kind of surprised at myself that it took this long for it to get here. But I'm glad it did. Scorsese, to this day, one of my favorite directors. Anytime he releases a film theatrically, and it is playing in my area, I typically go. I know the first of his films I saw theatrically was Bringing Out the Dead. And I don't think I've missed one up until The Irishman because we didn't have that choice. And it makes me nervous for Killers of the Flower Moon. Like, am I going to have to wait for that to come on Apple? Or is that actually going to play theatrically? Well, I guess time will tell.
It could end up being like Silence. Silence got here, but it was like very limited.
Okay, so fun. So quick story on Silence. The weekend it released, I had two options to see it. One was like at like a reasonable time, like during the day. So it was like 2 p.m. on a Saturday. The other option was 11 p.m. at a theater all the way across town, and that movie was 3 hours.
Is that the one you went to?
Yeah, no. I think I was working at Comedy Festival the day I saw it, because I think I went from the theater to that, because I'm like, ooh, I need to pick me up after this. Have you seen Silence?
I have not, but I want to see it.
It's not exactly a laugh a minute. I'm just going to...
Oh, I know it's a depressing movie. It's just one of those. I just haven't watched it yet.
We'll get to it probably in the second half of the we talked Sammy into all the Scorsese's. Yeah, we're gonna get to It and Last Temptation, a lot sooner than we will like Kundun and New York, New York. And I, and you know, to quote Christopher Montalcanti, Marty, Kundun, I liked it. But The Departed was actually Scorsese's return, sort of, to the crime genre, because that's the genre he's most known for, even though it's not even a third of the types of films he's made. I mean, most of them are centered around the city of New York. This is like a rare except one of the rare exceptions. I think maybe Color of Money might be, and obviously like Kundun and Last Temptation of Christ and Silence. Those are not necessarily New York stories, although one almost was. And I'll let you guess which one.
Was it Color of Money?
No. That one would have made sense. No, because... No.
I don't know.
Okay, it wasn't necessarily specifically Last Temptation of Christ, but Scorsese, because Scorsese wanted to be a priest, but his love of movies and rock and roll kind of overtook his third love of religion. But he once upon a time wanted to do a modern era New York gangster film in black and white about the story of Christ.
That would have been interesting.
I mean, yeah, it is one of those rare moments. Like, also having seen Last Temptation, I think he did, you know, I think he's made his Christ film.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. And also, it too has the New York accents. Because why not? But this is just something about the idea of Jesus Christ in a suit and tie, in black and white, with a Bronx accent. It's just like, all of this is wrong, so wrong. And I don't think Scorsese is going to find a second studio willing to pony up the money to piss off Christians once again. Because I was alive for the Last Temptation release.
When did that come out?
It was like late 80s. I want to say it was like 87, 88. And I mean, he'd been trying to make that since the 70s. Because he and Barbara Hershey, who played Mary Magdalene in Last Temptation, they met on the set of Boxcar Bertha because, well, she was Bertha. And she actually gave him the novel to read, and like every other film that has come across Scorsese's desk, with the exception of Raging Bull, his reaction was, I have to make this now. And he almost made it with Paramount after, in the early 80s, and Paramount folded whenever the Catholic League was like, no, even though that film was made by a devout Catholic, written by a devout Calvinist, and the novel was from a devout Greek Orthodox Christian. But any film that has any sort of religious bent in dealing with Christianity and doesn't come from if it comes from pure flicks, it's going to get scorned by people who have read, screenplays or seen movies. And if it's not, it's just going to get condemned by all of the right-wing evangelicals is the phrase I'm looking for. But it was a massive fallout, and the only reason Universal let him do it, because honestly the 80s were a dark time for Scorsese, but they agreed to do it on like a small budget. But it was just like, we'll let you make this one, but you have to make one for us. And the one he made for them was the remake of Cape Fear, which is the first Scorsese film I ever actually saw start to finish. So part of how we got here. But have you ever heard of a film called Infernal Affairs?
Actually, I have. I've just never seen it.
Neither have I. But it's actually a trilogy, and it is the inspiration for Scorsese's return to the crime film. This is an American remake that takes a lot of the ideas from the main film, and then I think the beginning and the end are the prequel and the sequel.
Hmm.
But Infernal Affairs was kind of a big deal. And around the time this movie was, like, new, I think you could pretty easily find it. You may still be able to easily find it now. I just didn't look.
I have no idea.
I didn't check Amazon. I didn't check eBay. So
I'm kind of interested to watch them, though.
Yeah. Well, and also there are two different versions of the original, from release in mainland China to release somewhere else. Two different endings to go along with the, you know, what you can and can't do in those regions. So very kind of similar to the Hays Code. Like, if you're a criminal, you have to be punished. So that was kind of their thing.
Oh, gotcha.
But it was kind of a semi-beloved property. Art House foreign film fans had heard of it. And then Scorsese gets a hold of William Monahan's screenplay and does what he does with it. And we should say that before this, we couldn't say the phrase Academy Award winner, Martin Scorsese, only a nominee. At this point, he was very much in the always a bridesmaid, never the bride. until this movie came out. And I think we can get into maybe later whether or not the film deserved it.
I'm trying to remember what was running up against it.
We'll get into that later.
I figured we would.
And that's translation for it's in my notes somewhere. Yeah. So I know we said at the beginning we're going to spoil the film. I'm going to do a quick plot synopsis. This is really the story of three men. We have William Costigan Jr., played by Leonardo DiCaprio, Colin Sullivan, played by Matt Damon, and Frank Costello, played by Jack Nicholson. Costello is a Boston area kingpin, sort of inspired by Whitey Bulger, who Johnny Depp would go on later to play in Black Mass. It's mostly the story of the kind of the dual lives of Costigan and Sullivan. Sullivan was a young kid groomed by Costello to enter the police academy and rise to the ranks to become an informant for Costello. Meanwhile, Costigan, who comes from a family who's mostly all criminal except for his old man and his mom, they were kind of the outcasts of that family because they were kind of the more honorable ones. Costigan enters into the state police and is picked to join a special undercover team in which he will serve a prison sentence and come out as a as an undercover cop to try to infiltrate Costello's team. He's able to do that and the man's made a Teflon because he nearly gets caught multiple times, but he rises to become one of Costello's trusted men, even in reporting on him. Things come to a head in which Costigan figures out who Costello's mole is. Costello's mole finds out Costello is an FBI informant, which is why all of the murders and drugs that Frank's done over the years, he was just able to get away with because he was informing on someone else. And Sullivan kills Costello. Costigan tries to take in Sullivan and is killed in the process. But it's okay because in the end, Marky Mark ends up killing Sullivan, and the most heavy-handed metaphor in cinema history occurs before credits roll.
That was one of those. I was just like, that's probably my least favorite part of the movie. It was just like, that was a little on the nose.
It reminds, I know I've talked about it on the show, it reminds me of the Greg the Bunny episode for Eraserhead. I am symbolism. No, we got it. Mm-hmm. We got it.
You sure you got it? No, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. 18 minutes before we get the title card?
Yeah, that is true, isn't it?
Yeah. Not the longest, because I know a lot of movies these days don't have the title till the end of the movie. unless you're Apocalypse Now, when in which you technically never had the movie title show up. Well, the movie title was written on a rock, but I wouldn't necessarily call that a title card, especially whenever it's like, you know, they're just getting Kurtz's compound. So like 7 hours have passed. But Drive My Car, which was the winner for the best foreign film this year, 30 minutes before the titles, and that was a opening credits that they did, but it was 30 minutes into it before we got that. And Gaspar Noé's lighthearted family comedy Climax didn't have the opening credits until 45 minutes into the movie. So sometimes it's an artistic choice.
I could tell.
Yeah. And then sometimes it is just like, we need to set the world up before we really launch into the movie. And I think with Drive My Car and this film, that's kind of what they did.
Yeah, because they set it up pretty well. They immediately set up Jack Nicholson's character very well.
Yeah.
You kind of understand.
Who was almost...
Go ahead.
Yeah. I was gonna say, who was almost played by Al Pacino, who Marty wanted Al in the movie. And didn't work out, but he was able to get another person that from, you know, that new Hollywood era that came up around the same time, Nicholson, in the role. And Nicholson just kind of got to do whatever he wanted.
And rightfully so, because, you know, Jack Nicholson, he's good no matter what he does.
But it was also like, we're just going to let this guy do whatever he wants because, you know, I don't want him chasing me through a hedge maze with a fucking axe.
Even if a movie's not good, Jack Nicholson's usually good in it.
Yeah, I've heard of bad movies where Jack Nicholson was in them, but I've never heard anyone say, Nicholson was terrible here.
Yeah, he usually gives it his all. It's just one of those, just like anybody else, he tends to get in a bad movie from time to time.
Yeah, it happens. Unless you're John Cazale. Unfortunately, he didn't live... long enough to have the bad movie.
Well, yeah. I think I remember you telling me that a while back.
Yeah. He's one of the only actors with, like, a perfect filmography, because it's Godfather, Conversation, Dog Day Afternoon, Godfather 2, Deer Hunter. That's it.
That was it. That's a pretty good run.
Yeah. Also, he was engaged to Meryl Streep at the time of his death.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that. But, how do you like how they set up Matt Damon's character in this movie?
I mean, to talk about Matt, you got to talk about Leo as well, because I feel like this entire movie, they're running like opposite lives, because, you know, they're both rats. One is a cop pretending to be a criminal. The other one is a criminal pretending to be a cop. You know, one and both kind of came from the same area. One aspired, you know, to be like upper class, and the other one just wanted to be an honorable man. I thought they set things up well. What the funniest part about before we even meet those characters is we meet Jack, you know, Frank Costello, and, you know, in The Irishman, they, you know, many a joke has been made, mostly by me, about the de-aging in The Irishman. Which I love The Irishman. Don't get me wrong, I love that movie, but there are a lot of moments, particularly whenever, you know, the 75-year-old, or however old he is, De Niro, de-aged to resemble a 30-something De Niro, kicking his daughter's boss, but the way his kick is very much the 75-year-old man. I mean, you can only do so much, but... I kind of love this movie's idea of de-aging Nicholson. Just keep him in the shadow, even if it doesn't make sense. Keep him in the shadow.
Of course, at this time, it worked for that time, because that's pretty much kind of what they had. Makeup.
Yeah. I mean, there are a couple of moments when it's just like, he is the only one in shadow and everyone else is not. There's some times where it's just like, not appropriate, but then a lot of times where it was absolutely appropriate, and I think it would have been better than trying to de-age Nicholson.
True.
Because Dr. Sleep hadn't happened, and we didn't know we could just, you know, put Henry Thomas in some makeup and a wig and shove him out there.
That's very true. I forgot that.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is Leo's third film with Scorsese, following Gangs of New York and The Aviator. And I think this is the part, this is the era of Leo's career where we finally stopped seeing him, you know, the first 18 minutes of this movie, notwithstanding, but we finally stopped seeing him as like a 16-year-old boy, and we started to see adult Leo. Because even in The Aviator and Gangs of New York, he was still trying to break out of that teen heartthrob mode he was in after Titanic.
Because that movie, even though it was a huge success for him, it really kind of hurt him a little bit in the long run, that part.
Well, I don't know if it hurt him. I think it actually helped him. It was just, you know, on screen
I'm talking about like in seeing him as anything but like a heartthrob.
I think it was helping get him out of that, but he wasn't quite there yet. But that run of Gangs and Catch Me If You Can and Aviator and then into this, I think helped him a lot, because he wasn't necessarily washing Titanic off. He was kind of washing the stink of the beach off of him. But
I remember people talking about that movie. I have never seen it.
Apparently the book is very beloved and the movie is very not. And I have never read the book, and that is one of the that was kind of the dip in Danny Boyle's filmography as well, because it was like after Trainspotting and before 28 Days Later. But I mean, The Beach, I was listening to, weirdly enough, I was listening to a podcast about Titanic today, and they were talking about the backlash Leo was getting from Titanic, which is, you know, what happens whenever a movie is insanely is as insanely popular as that. And also he didn't get the acting nod from the Academy. So that began the when is Leo due for his Oscar conversation. But there was a tale told of watching, you know, waiting to see The Phantom Menace, and a trailer for The Beach came on, and Leo got booed. And now we cheer for Leo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it just took him nearly getting mauled by a bear to finally get it. Yeah. I honestly would have given it to him for Wolf of Wall Street over The Revenant. Because, you know. Because
he did amazing in that movie.
He did. And also, you're more likely to get me to watch The Wolf of Wall Street, yes, partially because it's Scorsese, but also because it's just a great movie, over The Revenant, which was good, but, oh, God, I never want to watch it again. It's a slog to get through.
I forget how many big names were in this movie, but besides Matt Damon, Leonardo DiCaprio, and Jack Nicholson, I knew those three were in there. And, of course, Mark Wahlberg. I forgot Martin Sheen was in this movie.
Yeah, because, you know, he's such a small role, but like an important one.
He is very important, and I forgot Vera Farmiga's in this movie too.
Well, this is how we learn. This is how I learned who Vera Farmiga was, because before she was, you know, Lorraine Warren, it would be like, oh, it's the lady, it's the world's worst psychiatrist from The Departed in this movie. Cool. And I'm not, and that's not knocking her performance. This is knocking literally everything she was asked to do in this movie.
Oh, yeah. She did a terrible job at her job in this movie.
Yes. Mm-hmm. See, a violent offender comes into your office seeking drugs and threatens suicide, and you just write him a prescription for drugs. And like, cool, lady.
And then you start a sexual relationship with him. Why you're going out with Matt Damon?
Yeah, I don't even think that was the worst decision she made in this movie.
No, but it was just one of those, it's like, I don't really think she knows what she's doing.
Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, and there's a lot of great supporting characters, like Kevin Corrigan, who I kind of love Kevin Corrigan, but no one knows who he is. I'm struggling with the new Law and Order, the new old Law and Order.
I watched it because I do love the old Law and Order, but I haven't watched this new one.
I did out of curiosity. You have, I don't know how well this guy's known, James Badge Dale. Does that name ring a bell?
Not really, no.
Okay. He's kind of like, if you need, I'm blanking on his name. He was in First Contact, Neil something. Blonde guy, was in a lot of cop shows. It's like, basically, if you can't get him, you get James Badge Dale. But he was on a short-lived AMC series that only lasted for one season. It pissed me off whenever it ended, called Rubicon.
Oh, I remember when you were into that show.
Yeah, and I know I use, I have somewhere around here a bootleg of the first season. At least I still think I do. But I really wish that show had continued. Also, it had Private Cowboy from Full Metal Jacket in it. But he is the other informant that shoots Leo at the end of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a handful of people in here that I wish were bigger than they were, and then there are some people in this movie I wish would go away. should we go ahead and talk about him?
Sure.
I think this may be... I know we talked about it's complicated recently, and we love this, but I think this is the tail end of the great Alec Baldwin performances playing a prick.
I agree, because
yeah,
he's one of he fit the role perfectly in this.
He did, and he has shades of like talk radio era Alec Baldwin, where I just still see it in his face. Like, he's still got that 80s era look about him, even though he's getting older. But
yeah, because like I said, he played this well because he's played it before very well in multiple movies.
It's a shame we're probably never going to see him again. And by shame, I mean probably a good thing. Because, we were talking in the pre-show about someone who, fell from grace and could have bounced back. I thought the same thing of Baldwin, and not so much anymore.
He just keeps putting. He won't shut up.
No, but separating art from artist, he was great in this movie, and him playing off of Marky Mark in this movie, it's some of my favorite moments.
Yeah, because I like Mark Wahlberg. He's not always good.
He is not, and I know Sammy's not here to defend him.
Which means he's not always good.
We can beat up on him.
It depends on what he's in, if he's really good.
Yeah, well, I've always maintained that he is good in it if he believes in the product, or if he believes in what he's doing, or if he's just there for a paycheck. And then there's The Happening, which I'm still not sure which one was which.
I don't think he even knew what was going on in The Happening.
I'm pretty sure no one knew what was going on in The Happening.
But
I would put this up there with my favorite Wahlberg performances.
Yeah, because he was a complete prick in this movie. But, that's what made it work so well.
He's an asshole, but he's our asshole. So we.
Yeah, he's somebody that, at the end of that, you want him on your side because, he's going to get the job done, but he's just almost unbearable to work with.
Yeah, especially if you're Asian. Anyway, moving forward, Ray Winston, how familiar were you with him before this movie? Or another question: are you familiar with who Ray Winston is?
Yes, I am. I think the first time I realized who Ray Winston was in Beowulf.
You were the one that liked that one, right?
I enjoyed it at the time. I don't know if I would like it now if I went back and watched it, but I did enjoy it for the time.
Yeah. This is how I got to know who Ray Winston was, but I did go back and see a movie he made before this, which is a criminally underrated crime film called Sexy Beast, which is the movie. Yeah. Which that movie, if you weren't ever terrified of Ben Kingsley, that movie will terrify you of Ben Kingsley.
Yeah.
You there? Oh.
Oh, yeah. No. I haven't seen Sexy Beast in a long time.
But I know it's hard to find. They put out a Blu-ray of it, and whenever you buy a copy, I'm assuming you took out a small business loan to get it because it's not cheap.
Jeez.
Yeah. Gotta love those limited runs of things that just fuck it up.
I want that, but I'm not paying $300 for it.
I don't think it's that high, but it's still it's unreasonable. I mean, it's up there with the $100 that someone on eBay wanted for Bat Pussy.
That's like, yeah, that's not.
Yeah, there's also that would also imply there's a universe in which I'm comfortable paying any amount of money to own a copy of Bat Pussy. So. But Ray, you know, he's kind of a, if you need a British tough guy, he's also in one of the saddest tragedies ever committed on film, and he was in Cats.
Oh, he was in that?
Yep.
Oh, geez, I did not know that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's not the most embarrassing part of Cats, but he's still in Cats. Which, as much as I loathe and detest that movie, I kind of want to do it on the show.
Oh God! Ugh.
Which would you rather sit through, that or Pink Flamingos?
Oh,
is there a Sophie's choice in this? No, there's not.
I don't know.
One of the movies you see a butthole, the other one you don't.
Well, depending on the cut of the movie. There's supposed to be a butthole cut of the Cats movie.
Yes, it's called the assembly cut. And, you know, I mean, I know it by calling that the assembly cut forces me to call the version that we saw in theaters the finished cut, even though that movie is technically still not finished.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody really cares if it's finished or not.
I'm sure someone in Tom Hooper's household would like it. No one in Andrew Lloyd Webber's household would like it, because apparently he did a charity commentary for the 98 filmed version of the stage show, and he never called it by name, but he was talking some shit about a certain movie.
So he did not like the adaptation at all.
No, which is one of the rare times me and Andrew Lloyd Webber agree on a thing.
You know, you tend to agree with somebody at least once.
Yeah, Broken Clocks are right twice in a day. So let's talk about Jack. Jack does Unhinged well. He was unhinged here. I think it's kind of telling, and maybe this is just me jaded from having watched this movie four times in the last 3 weeks. I think you can kind of tell Jack didn't give a fuck, and Jack was just going to do what he wanted. And from what I understand, Scorsese was not going to stop him.
Would you, though?
I mean, the man made De Niro behave. Scorsese made his career dealing with Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci. You know. he's gonna let Jack walk all over. And I'm not saying Jack sat there and disrespected him, but I don't think there was any amount of convincing Al Pacino could do on his part to whip out a strap-on. Jack did. The whole opera scene and then throwing the cocaine around scene, it was Jack's idea. I mean, Al's done his cocaine movies, so. But I do like Jack's performance here and how he is a fearsome, terrible guy, but there are times whenever he's almost trying to be like a father figure to Leo, you know, trying to suggest maybe he go back to school, doing everything he can because, you know, he did have respect for members of his family to keep him out of that life.
That's very true. Like, and I love how he's, anytime he makes threats or just starts pretty much, you know, like, you better get with the program. If not, you're going to be sorry type speeches or just talks. So you're just like, I'm scared.
Yeah. I mean, the man is having a casual conversation, eating a sandwich, and also pulling the ring off of a severed hand at the same time. That's a guy that doesn't have to yell. I mean, Jack yells a few times in this movie, but that one was warranted, I think. The rest of the time, he's like, he doesn't have to threaten because, you know, he has no qualms about killing people and just getting rid of them.
No, I think that's why he gets respect for what he does in this movie, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the only person that's allowed to talk shit to him in this movie is Winston, is Mr. French. And by talking shit, I mean things like, you know, whenever he shoots the lady in the back of the head and goes, she fell funny. He's the only one that can say, you really need to see someone. Even though he is shooting himself in the head while running his car into something.
Still, but it was like, yeah. It was still just with a calm demeanor. He was just like, oh, well, this is it.
Well, he knew if he didn't die in the accident, he was going to do jail time. So he's like, nope, not me.
I forgot how much I did like this movie, because it's been a while since.
Mm-hmm.
But I also forgot how much of a cat and mouse game this movie was, too, between Leo and Matt Damon's character.
Yeah, specifically, like, the porn theater sequence where they're all in the same room and, you know, Leo's trying to figure out who.
Or it'd be like, really? That's how you're going to do it? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But with Scorsese, you just like, he knows how to film all that very well. He knows how to keep the tension going.
Yep. And probably going to put a Rolling Stones track over it.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Probably going to put the same Rolling Stones track on it.
What else have we not covered out of this movie?
Well, we really haven't talked about Matt and Lee, you know, performances. I know Sammy has opinions on the accents in this movie, which, by the way, I love that Jack didn't even attempt an Irish accent. He's like, I'm just going to sound like Jack Nicholson.
Yeah. I don't think that would have worked out really well either.
No. And I hate to say it, and look, the accents in this movie don't bother me. Are they mismatched? Yes. But am I about to pay a compliment to a man I don't want to pay a compliment to, but I have to? Yes. This is why Bryan Singer said no one should do accents in Valkyrie. They should just speak with their own voice. Because that's when you get the mismatched stuff. And I don't think Leo's accent is as bad as maybe Sammy thinks it is. But, I mean, it's better than mine.
Yeah. It didn't really bother me either.
Yeah.
But no. Also, I'm also not from Boston, so.
No. And I know she worries about what the people of Boston might think of it and how, you know, Matt and Mark let him get away with it. And I'm like, because probably no one gives a shit. You know, this movie almost kicks off with a Dropkick Murphys song. So that's what they're focusing on. And it's also a Matt Damon movie in Boston where he's not doing fucking math. It's Casey, maybe give him Kevin Corrigan's part. But, you know, I'd rather have Kevin Corrigan than Casey Affleck. Is Casey the better actor? Yes. Is Kevin way less problematic? Absolutely. And also, if you're going to see a Ben and Matt movie, watch The Last Duel. Like, the movie is good. Oscars took a cheap shot at it.
I need to watch that. I've heard it's really good.
It was, me and the 14 other people that saw it really loved it. So
I need to watch it so Ridley Scott's not as pissed off anymore.
Look, Ridley Scott's going to be pissed off whether you do or don't.
That's true.
Yeah. It was the superior 2021 Ridley Scott movie. I said what I said because I saw House of Gucci. You want to talk about a movie with accents that don't quite match? Ooh.
That's one.
That's one. Let's just say Leonardo seemed more like a native person of Boston, native citizen of Boston, compared to Lady Gaga and her Countess Dracula impression. Although I'm still kind of pissed Jared Leto is not our new Mario because he understood the assignment.
He knew what he was supposed to do.
He did. He's like, guys, I want you to make me look like a slightly melted version of the guy from Maniac, and then I'm going to do everyone's Mario impression ever. And now he's a vampire. We want to date this episode. So, is there anything you want to talk about before we get into categories?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, then why don't we move on? Because I feel like this is where we're going to get to cover a lot of the stuff that we didn't really know how to do in the previous conversation. So, but first, we're going to start with, did John like the soundtrack? It's a Scorsese movie. Duh. I mean, it's got Dropkick Murphys. It's got Rolling Stones doing Gimme Shelter. It's got the band and Van... still on Thin Ice, Van Morrison doing a cover of Pink Floyd's Comfortably Numb and it not sucking. Yeah, I'm on board with this one. While I'm looking at the Bechdel test, you want to do the Rotten Tomatoes score?
Sure. This one might be one of our easiest ones.
Yeah. Not going to lie, I know the answer to one of them because it was unavoidable when I was doing my research. But go ahead and ask anyway.
Okay. What do you think the critic rating is for The Departed?
I'm going to go with 90.
That is very true. It is a
yeah.
Because I just looked it up a little bit before the show, and I knew it was going to be high, but I was like, I really wasn't expecting 90. I was expecting like 80.
Well, I mean, it is a Best Picture winner. I know that doesn't always necessarily mean anything because, you know, Don't Look Up got nominated and it was like a 50-something.
Yeah. Well, do you think that's what the critic, the audience or was?
I didn't because it was on the, was not on the Wikipedia page. So I'm going to take a shot in the dark and I'm going to go 91.
Close. It was 94%.
Oh, wow. So critics and audience is not too far apart.
No, it wasn't. It was like it was pretty well liked all the way around.
Yep. It was very well liked. In fact, our boy Roger, fourth best film of the year. I'm just saying. Also, Richard Schickel of Time headed to number two. It made a lot of year-end best lists. I mean, there's a whole section of the Wikipedia just devoted to that. And of course, you know, it took the top prize at the Academy Awards. And I said we would get to it. It took the top prize for the Academy Award Best Picture. And we'll see if you agree if it was the one that deserved it most. Your nominees for that year were The Departed,
okay,
Babel.
I've not seen Babel.
Letters from Iwo Jima. Little Miss Sunshine.
Okay.
And the Queen.
Out of the ones I've seen, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of like I still have not seen all of Babel because it never held my interest every time I tried, and I've never seen the Queen. And I never saw Letters from Iwo Jima. I saw the Flags of Our Fathers. I saw that one in theaters, but I didn't see Letters of Iwo Jima. But of that list, I agree that it was the best of the five. Is it the best film of 2006? I tried looking through the list, and honestly, I couldn't find one that I think was more deserving. I also don't think it was that strong of a year. So, I mean, this is also the same year as, like, Superman Returns and Clerks 2 and, you know, Hostel. Like, not necessarily all those are terrible films, but I mean, we were never going to hear it. And your best, and the winner for Best Picture, Clerks 2. Also, Pirates of the Caribbean 3. The Omen remake, Cars, The Da Vinci Code. Is it not the strongest year? Now, when it comes to Scorsese's win for Best Director, I mean, looking at the nominees he was up against, you know, Eastwood for Letters from Iwo Jima, the guy who directed Babel, who also directed the movie about the bear that ate Leo, Stephen Frears for The Queen, Paul Greengrass for United 93. I think his only competition really in that list was Greengrass for United 93.
Really?
But, yeah, because that was a really good film and it was a really strong contender. And I'm actually kind of, in retrospect, surprised that that movie didn't get a Best Picture nod because...
especially in time period.
Yeah, but... and this is also the same year Oliver Stone, you know, conspiracy theorist, director turned conspiracy theorist turned director, Oliver Stone made World Trade Center, and it was the one that had all of the sappiness of the score of a Spielberg ending from start to finish.
It's a really odd movie.
Yeah, it's just like when you look at Oliver Stone's career and just like, oh, Oliver Stone's going to do a 9/11 movie? Oh, that is going to be the edgiest thing we've seen. What is this?
And it was nothing. It was like, you wouldn't even know that he had directed it unless you looked it up.
Yeah. It's like Nicolas Cage looking sad and Michael Shannon walking across the country to New York. That's all you take away from that movie. But, I mean, I think that, yeah, he deserved it for this. But if we are also honest, he's not just winning it for The Departed. He's winning for Goodfellas and Raging Bull and all of the other films that he's made, because otherwise they wouldn't have had like Coppola and Spielberg up the, and one other of his contemporaries up there to present the award. Because it's not like they were going to open the envelope and go, and we're Marty's buddies, and the award goes to not Marty.
Yeah.
Now, if it was in the last few years, anything goes at the Oscars now. So. Sometimes we award the right award the wrong movie. We're the Academy. We don't know what's happening anymore. Let's eliminate 8 categories so we can have Megan Thee Stallion do a guest verse on "We Don't Talk About Bruno," which is a song we didn't even bother to nominate.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, and I like Megan Thee Stallion, but that was pointless. Anyway, moving on from that. So, Joseph, do you think The Departed passed the Bechdel test? Or should I explain what the Bechdel test is?
You can if you want to.
Okay. If you're new around here and you haven't heard this segment, the Bechdel test is a film, is a test started by cartoonist Alison Bechdel, who also wrote the graphic novel Fun Home, which was turned into a very delightful musical that you should all listen to. But she got sick of seeing like very male-centric films, so she developed this text to let, you know, people, mostly to let women know that this one isn't just totally male-centric, even though 50 Shades of Grey passed these tests. But the tests are, the film has to have two named female characters, they have to have a conversation, and they have to talk about something other than a man. So with that being said, does The Departed pass the Bechdel test?
I want to say no, because there's only one.
Not even close. No, it does not. I don't think there's a scene with two women talking, because all of Vera Farmiga's part, she's either with Matt or Leo.
Yeah.
She literally talks like no one else in that movie. It's all Matt and Leo.
Now that you say that, that's the only people she talks to. Yeah, I don't see her talking
to anyone
else.
And any other woman in this movie is being talked to by Jack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it definitely does not pass it.
Doesn't come close. All right, so time for best line, worst line. Why don't you go first, so just in case you take one of the ones I highlighted?
I had a hard time picking some of these because it's a really good one, but something I thought was like, it may not have even paid attention to it as much, but I like the whole scene where they're talking about how they could tell who's a cop and who's not.
That was fun.
I did like those lines. Like,
yeah.
They're not paying attention to us. They're cops. Yeah.
And what's great about that scene is what you're more worried about is Leo getting made and, you know, they're having fun, but that is the scene where Frank is really testing Billy, you know, because that's the night they use the different crew, using all new guys, and that information gets passed on to Queenan, but it never gets to Sullivan. So that particular moment was the saving of his ass, because that was after he didn't stick around to have his social security number checked.
Yeah.
So that was his like final loyalty test that he passed to Frank. So,
and just any time that Frank pretty much like just threatens somebody,
mm-hmm.
especially the one a few times threatened Matt Damon's character, he's like, "Do you want your girlfriend, Parker?" Whatever you want. He's like, yes, I do. He goes, to do what I say.
Yeah.
But those are things I really liked about it. I didn't really write any of them down. It was just one of those I liked the mm-hmm. lines.
Yeah. A lot of my favorite lines actually came from, of all people, Marky Mark.
his stuff was really good.
Yeah. Whenever he's talking to the camera tech, he's just like, "Who the fuck are you?" And Dignam's like, "I'm the guy who does his job. You must be the other guy." And one of my favorite exchanges is between him and Alec Baldwin. He's just like, when he says, "Unfortunately, this shithole has more fucking leaks than the Iraqi Navy," and Ellery's like, "Fuck yourself." And he goes, I'm tired from fucking your wife. How's your mother? Good. She's tired from fucking my father. Another great one he had was, my theory on feds is true, that they're like mushrooms, feed them shit and keep them in the dark.
I forgot about that line. That was really mm-hmm. good.
Yeah. And Martin Sheen had a good one. You know, it's kind of cheesy, but I liked it. It was the, "Do you want to be a cop or do you want to appear to be a cop?"
It is kind of cheesy, but still good.
And of course, the most nonsensical line, and it's one that if it wasn't for closed captioning, I wasn't sure if he was talking about a potato or not. But Costello says, "Lennon said, I'm an artist. You give me a fucking tuba and I'll get you something out of it." But it comes out tuber. Like, is he talking about a potato?
Well, and this is the segment. Like, I don't think we could say there's any bad lines. Not to me.
I didn't write any down, but there, I mean, not every line in this movie is perfect, and I think if I went back and watched it a fifth time this week and like really fine tooth combed, I could have found quite a few, and I don't want to be dogging on Vera Farmiga, but I feel like a lot of the terrible lines would be given to her.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like why not? We're making you do the worst career moves ever.
Well, say that. There was nothing that really stood out for me.
I mean, it's all delivered by like terrible people. So,
the people that are using it in the context they're using it in, that they mm-hmm. would say this because they don't.
Yeah, care. it is very realistic, you know, because yeah. it's, you know, set in Boston.
It'd be the same way, like. It's like in Django Unchained when certain people say it. It's like, yeah, they would have said that without hesitation because they don't care. Yeah.
Possibly with more frequency than what's being said here now.
That's very true.
Yeah. And I don't really have a worse line either. Because I think if a line wasn't good here, it was just something that didn't stand out.
Yeah, it was more of like it could have been better. Nothing like, oh my god, that was mm-hmm. awful.
Okay, I got a creepier romantic.
Okay.
Yeah. When you're on a date with a guy, you know, as you do, and you're talking about seeing you again, and he says, who says I want to see you again? And even though he's joking, is this creepy or romantic? I don't even know if this qualifies. I just wanted to have the segment and the conversation about that.
I thought you were going to say when he was in the elevator, he's like, here's my card. I don't need it. I'm a detective. I'll find you.
I actually did kind of like that scene because, you know, everyone else in that elevator is fucking annoyed.
Oh, yeah. And
yeah.
They're like, oh, this is funny. And everybody's like, oh, please let it be over. Come on.
Yeah. I don't know if you watched a lot of Jim Norton stand up, but he had a bit about things like that work in a romantic comedy, but in real life, everyone's just embarrassed for you.
Yes.
like that's what they're talking about. Also, that was one of the things I was going to bring up in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Like, it's somehow both. This is a cute meet cute, but you are pissing off everyone in that elevator, and some of them are possibly armed. Get off the elevator and use the stairs. So you ready for Good, the Bad, and the Ugly?
Yeah, but I just don't know what else I would add to this.
Yeah. I love the opening of this movie. I think, you know, that mixed with the grainy footage of, you know, I guess 70s or early 80s Boston, mixed with Jack's narration and, you know, with the exception of always being in shadows, was really cool. I loved Leo and Jack's first meeting in the bar where he has to prove he's not a cop and he has the broken hand. And so they have to make sure he doesn't have a wire in the cast. I also love, like, the scene kind of before that, whenever he meets Mr. French, and he hits the guy for asking him if he's on his period for having the cranberry juice, and French just kind of lays shit down. It's like, there are guys you can hit, and there are guys you can't. Now, he's not quite a guy you can't hit, so I'm going to make that ruling. You don't hit him. Yep. Honestly, Ray Winston is just a delight in this movie, and like everyone talks about everyone else in this movie but him.
Something I literally forgot to touch on it. Martin Sheen's death in this movie was
very good. Yeah,
it was brutal but also extremely well made. Well done.
Yeah, and Leo's reaction to it of just that, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah, it was just a huge gut punch in the middle of the movie.
Yeah. Well, that and whenever, you know, it's the aftermath and, you know, one of the guys has been shot and he knows that he gave Billy the wrong address, but he was there. And he goes, but he didn't rat on him.
Because he was also an informant.
Yeah.
Or no, he was
Was he, or did Dignam work some magic? Or not Dignam, Colin work some magic?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good possibility.
I think you could see it either way, but, you know, if you got a problem, you know, he'll solve it. Sorry, that was a different mediocre white rapper from the 80s. As for, like, the bad and the ugly, I do think that this film is a little long. I think a little bit of it can be trimmed, but, you know, it does fall under my favorite category of you should cut something, but I'm not going to tell you what.
It's really hard to pick and choose what would cut because everything's well done.
Yeah, and also so much of it is important. Like, you know, you wouldn't think the conversation about, between Leo and Anthony Anderson at the beginning of the movie talking about him getting a blowjob, you know, if he graduates, that's not going to mean anything. You know, it's like, well, this seems like a waste of, you know, time, but you cut to the end, it's like, oh my god, they know. He's like, you know me, you know who I am.
Yeah.
Also, it sucks, but I almost feel like there's not one other person. It's like Dignam and Queenan are the only two people running that department. Like, they're the only two people there. There's not like a backup that might know what's going on
in case like two of them get, you know, die or
yeah. One gets thrown off of a roof and the other one punches Matt Damon and has to take a 2-week paid vacation. But I mean, it does work to the movie's benefit to only have to have the two people who know who are taken out. And then, you know, going back to like a movie like Cruising with Al Pacino, there's only one cop who knows Al Pacino's undercover. And well, not totally true, because there is the interrogation scene with the naked cowboy, but, but I mean, obviously the less people know, the better. It's like, Marty, this is Coke. I'm just going to throw it in the air. We did that all the time in the 70s. And by the air, I meant our noses. Of all the passion projects in the world Scorsese had, from reading random books, De Niro had to threaten him in the hospital to get Raging Bull made. It's like only arguably the best, one of the best Scorsese films. Also, where would you rank this in Scorsese's filmography? Or should we save that question for after the big question?
I guess you could say, right? Because I don't think it's a surprise what we're going to say about this movie.
No. The only mystery is the one represented by a sock puppet.
Yes.
So
it's not one of my absolute favorites of his, but it's good.
Yeah. Well, let's get into that, and let's ask the big question then. Joseph, sock puppet Sammy, do you recommend The Departed?
Go ahead, Joseph? Sock puppet Sammy.
Why don't you go ahead, Joseph, so real life John can pull up the sock puppet's text message.
Okay. Yeah, I survived. It's a great movie. It's yeah. Well done. It's on the edge of your seat the whole time. Mm-hmm. It's just great Scorsese filmmaking. What more can you ask for?
Yeah. Okay, so according to the text message, Sammy survived. Also, listeners, you were spared a very long-winded diatribe about her love for Leo and Boston accents. I think we covered part of that. As for me, I mean, obviously, I hated this film. I hated every minute of it. I survived this. I very strongly survived this, even though I am kind of sick to death of watching this fucking movie. I've seen it way too many times in the last 2 weeks, just prepping for the show. This is not one of my favorite Scorsese movies. I would say it's... I actually have a list. I know you're shocked.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I did rank of the 25 feature films plus The Last Waltz, which is technically a documentary. This is number 8 overall. I mean, it's just above The Irishman, After Hours, and Casino, but it's behind, you know, obviously Goodfellas, Taxi Driver, King of Comedy, Raging Bull, Wolf of Wall Street, Last Waltz, and even Cape Fear. I've got a lot of love for Cape Fear, and I think that's one of the one of his underrated ones. But yeah, I had a fun time watching this movie. I am putting it down for a very long time. It'll be a while before I return to it. But if I need a Scorsese hit, I think I could easily watch Goodfellas anytime.
See, for me, like, Goodfellas and Casino are up. I think I like them a little bit more than this movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, Casino's biggest sin is it's just not as good as Goodfellas.
Yeah,
and oh my God, that's most movies.
Well, and it's still great. Like I said, that is not as good as Goodfellas. But what really, how can
I think? I mean, I think it's honestly as quotable as Goodfellas. I mean, you know. Am I funny? Tell me how I'm funny is right up there with, you know, you made me pop your fucking eye out for Charlie M. Like, I may have to redo this list. Yeah, I like Casino better than The Departed.
Yeah, and I have not seen Cape Fear. I need to watch that one.
Oh, Cape Fear is a good one.
And
that's another one where not only is Scorsese not in New York, he's doing. And accents, specifically Southern accents.
Well, and I like Wolf of Wall Street a little bit more than this movie. Like I'm saying, it's not.
Oh, me too.
This is a bad movie by any means. It's just.
Oh no, no.
Other
in fact,
that good.
Yeah, yeah. I have seen all but two of Scorsese's feature films. The documentary is going to take me a long, long time. But so I haven't seen Boxcar Bertha, and I haven't watched New York, New York. And from what I gather, I have not missed much in either. But I do need to actually just want to sit down and watch them so I can say I've seen all the feature films. But only The Color of Money and maybe his first film, Who's That Knocking at My Door, are the ones where I'm like, they're fine, but I wouldn't. I mean, I would not say Scorsese made a bad movie, but he's made maybe a couple that I'm just like, I'm not really fired up to watch this. Feel like the inclusion of Bertha in New York, New York would be the same.
I've never seen The Color of Money, but I've always wanted to watch it.
It's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
But I do like the first movie, The Hustler.
Yeah, I mean, and awesome that you've seen The Hustler and knew that this was that was a sequel.
Yeah, I knew it was a sequel. It's just I saw The Hustler and I really liked it, and I just haven't seen the sequel to it.
And like I said, it's fine. There's nothing really wrong with it. It's just not one of my personal favorites. It's the bottom of the list, and it's statements like that that are going to keep me off of the rewatchables, because Bill Simmons and Chris Ryan fucking love that movie. It almost made me wonder, like, did I see the wrong movie? Did I watch something different? But also, I've only seen Color of Money once, and even with some of the films I really love, like Wolf of Wall Street, Aviator, they played better on the second viewing than they did on the first, so maybe I just need to go back and watch Color of Money again.
True, it could be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But for now, we're putting The Departed, in order to get ready for next week, putting The Departed to bed and giving it a long kiss goodnight.
That's a good song.
Yeah. So next week, we're actually doing a chick flick based on our bullshit rules, because Gene Davis is the lead. But this is one of your picks, and this is going to be a first-timer for me.
Yeah, so it seems like I'm the only one out of all of us that have seen this movie.
To the best of my knowledge, yes. I would actually be incredibly surprised
if Sammy
based
has.
On all the movies that we have. Yeah, it's like, of all the movies we have shown you that are like, you know, the entry-level movies, you saw The Long Kiss Goodnight? What random flu day did you have TNT on?
And see, this is one, I remember watching it when it came out. I didn't get to go see it in theaters, of course. At the time, I was too young. But I remember when the video, it was on VHS at the time. I remember watching it and loved it. Yeah. But I love Gina Davis.
She is quite underrated, isn't she?
She is very underrated.
And
she had a heyday in the 90s, but she kind of dropped off after a bit. But she's still really good stuff.
Yeah. I just need to see something other than Beetlejuice, because it's like my frame of reference for her.
Because I remember watching A League of Their Own all the time.
Oh yeah, A League of Their Own, which we did on the show.
That Long Kiss Goodnight, and I know you kind of dread it, but I enjoyed Cutthroat Island.
I'm sick that week y'all do that show. I'm just saying.
And of course
she was- I've never seen it, but nothing other than you has ever screamed, we should watch Cutthroat Island.
You know, if you go back and watch it, it's going to be probably like Waterworld. It was an expensive movie, and it just fell. But it's like, it's not bad. It's just a normal run-of-the-mill movie nowadays.
Yeah. Also, you heard it here, folks. Joseph defended Waterworld on the internet. That's okay. I'll defend the long cut of Heaven's Gate. So... So, yes, next week we are doing Long Kiss Goodnight. Joseph, you got anything you want to plug?
No, I've just been watching a lot of Becker. That's just all I've been doing lately.
So, I got a couple of shout-outs this week I want to do, both music-related, because I don't think y'all need me going off about Winning Time for a fifth week in a row, but I can do it if you need me to. But two albums dropped on Friday that I really like. Actually, like four albums dropped on Friday I really like, so I'm cutting it down. But so we're in East Texas, and one of our local boys, Paul Coffin, who's a kind of a beloved country singer, but not on like a national level, but like almost a hipster level. So Paul's latest album, Country Coming Down, dropped on April 1st. And imagine, if you will, like 70s Merle Haggard kind of deep voice. But this album has like this really kind of fun, sick sense of humor to it. And it's almost like, I'm not saying he raps, but like a good chunk of the songs almost feel like brag rapping, because he raps a lot about having money, and it's not like it's a bad thing. It's like a status thing, and it's almost satirical. Like there's a song on here called Country Clubbing, and it is literally about being a member of a country club. but definitely check out the lead single, Country as Fuck. It is hilarious, and a lot of, just a really fun listen. And if you like that, go back and definitely check out some of his older stuff too. Also, this little unknown indie rock band from California called the Red Hot Chili Peppers dropped a new album called Unlimited Love. And you know, I'm a lukewarm Chili Peppers fan, and I need to go back and re-listen to Californication and Stadium Arcadium before I fully commit to this statement. But this may be my favorite Chili Peppers album, or at least my favorite one in a long time. Of course, I'm one of those people that also loved the album they did with Dave Navarro, One Hot Minute. Like, I know that album is kind of seen as like a blemish on their record, and I'm like, no, the blemishes were like the first four albums, whenever they were doing whatever that was. But definitely love this one. It is much like The Departed, it is a bit on the long side. It's 71 minutes, but definitely check out the first single, Black Summer, and the song The Heavy Wing, which is like not the album closer, but the song right before it, the penultimate song. And John Frusciante, who's back in the band, actually sings lead on the chorus. Fucking awesome song. So if you're not sure if you're going to like the album, the answer to that lies within the answer to the question, do you even like the Red Hot Chili Peppers? Because if you don't, you're not going to like this. Also, the Miley Cyrus live album didn't suck. I guess I should have gotten more into that when Sammy's not here, so she can't fight me on it. She's not a Miley fan, but
that's the best. That's like the most enthusiastic review ever. The live album didn't suck.
I really loved her last album, Plastic Hearts. It was one of my favorites of 2020. I think that was the year it dropped. And Miley kind of found a style that fits her voice, and she did really good. But you know, Eddie Trunk from SiriusXM and that old show on VH1, that metal show, was like, if you're never sure about a band, always check out their live album, because the live album is really going to show you what they can do. And it is a good mix of like her doing covers, and I guess I am doing this. It's like a mix of covers and then like some mashups with some of her songs. Like she combined, you know, she did a remix of her single Edge of Midnight that also incorporated Edge of 17, the Stevie Nicks song. But she also adds some of the Pixies' Where Is My Mind to We Can't Stop. And I know this is probably turning some people off, but it worked really well. Plus, there's a lot of songs from the Bangers album where, you know, Wrecking Ball came from. And I was just like, I guess I need to go back and listen to that album, because some of this shit is actually like really good. And she does a cover of Jolene and doesn't fuck it up. And of course, the final song of the night is a 7-minute version of Party in the USA. But no, it is a really fun album that shows that Miley has come into her own as a solo artist. And she does go on like a monologue on stage where she's, you know, telling some jokes and kind of being self-effacing. But she's just like, look, I've transformed into this, and this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. And it's just a really good speech, and it's a fun listen. So if you want to write off Miley, you know, maybe give that a chance. Also, before I kind of got on the word of the Miley train. The album opens up with a new song called Attention, which is really just, I'm sure, what she plays on a video screen to open her live shows. But one of the lines that's repeated a lot is, I need attention. And like, old John would have taken that joke and ran with it. And new John is just like, eh, this is just her acknowledging all the eras of Miley. Also, the new pop album is really good. We'll just do all four. All right. Well, Sock Puppet Sammy, hopefully you're back for the next regular episode. But Joseph, thank you for indulging and talking some Scorsese with me. And hopefully we can do this again soon with some more Scorsese.
I'm down for that.
Yeah. Which one should we do? Should we make her watch After Hours, or should we ease her into that? Actually, I don't know if there is easing you into After Hours.
I don't think there is either.
No. All right. Well, and listeners, thank you for indulging in this. And remember, you give me a podcast, I'll get you fucking something out of it.
Surviving Chick Flicks is brought to you by the Circle of Jug. The show is edited by John, and all clips used are the property of their copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, and leave us a 5-star rating at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get the show. If there's anything you would like us to cover on the show, or just drop us a line at survivingchickflicks@gmail.com. The show is copyright 2022, Circle of Jug Productions, all rights reserved.
Unfortunately, this shithole has more fucking leaks than the Iraqi Navy.
Fuck yourself.
I'm tired from fucking your wife.
How's your mother?
Good, she's tired from fucking my father.